I would like to acknowledge the Gadigal peoples of the Eora Nation as the traditional custodians of the land which we record this podcast and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. I would like to extend the respect to Aboriginal peoples listening today. Welcome to the PSA CPSU New South Wales podcast. I'm Marianne Lairdage. On today's podcast, we have Mark Morey, the Secretary of Unions New South Wales. Mark has a long history with the union movement. He has also worked for the Department of Social Security as a social worker, and he understands the importance of public service. Many of our members would recognise Mark as he has been to countless rallies, strikes and conferences here at the PSA. If there is anyone that can rev up a crowd, it's Mark. Mark, great to have you here today with us. Now, this is the first time we've had you on the pod. I thought it would be great if you could give us a little background on how you got involved in the union movement, and if you can also tell the listeners who is Unions New South Wales.
Well, thanks very much for having me on, Marianne, and it's great to be speaking to all the members and the listeners today. Unions New South Wales is the peak body for unions in New South Wales, obviously by the name.
Yeah.
But we have 45 affiliated trade unions and labour councils in the state.
So can I just ask, what's a labour council?
So a labour council, there were many, so workers set up labour councils early on to advocate on behalf of all workers' needs.
All right,
so they would be, and there are a number of them are set up around New South Wales, and certainly a lot of them were set up around mining towns in the early 1800s. So, for example, Broken Hill has its own Trades and Labour Council, and that's historically been there.
Sure.
Obviously, there's fewer and fewer of them, but obviously, like Victoria Trades Hall is another Labour Council. The QCU in Queensland is the same as us. So it's a peak body where affiliated unions come together to advocate for statewide issues. So it gives each union an opportunity to work together on common issues and show solidarity with each other.
Sure, sure. And so how did you get involved in the union movement?
Well, as you said at the start, I started off as a social worker. I worked out at Social Security, the Department of Social Security, as it was when I started out at Penrith. I worked there for a little while. And then I was a youth worker for a while at Penrith City Council and did a couple of other things. I think the thing that really convinced me about the union movement was the only social movement I've ever seen that can actually change a government is the union movement. And certainly in Social Security, you saw different faces but the same problems, certainly around economic disadvantage and social disadvantage. And the union movement provides that platform, whether you're a social worker in Social Security or you're doing administrative tasks in a government department, you can be active and part of a movement no matter where you are, and you can actually change society and improve lives for people and make it better for them. The union movement is not just about improving your workplace, it's also about improving the communities in which we live. So that's how I ended up getting into it. There was a position at Unions New South Wales that came up as a special project officer. I went and applied for that, did that job and just moved on from there.
Yeah, I always like asking people that have been around the movement for a long time that question, because everyone's got a different story. And the one thing sometimes people ask, why are we relevant? It's because we're there to help people. And yes, there's the pay and the conditions, but we're also there to support social issues.
Yes.
And I think that's important. And I mean, one of the biggest ones we've had in recent years was the Yes campaign for the LGBTQI community with the marriage equality. So that, you know, that just shows the commitment that unionists actually put behind social causes.
And I think the other one, obviously, that started in New South Wales with a group of domestic violence workers at the ASU was a 10 days paid domestic violence leave.
See, I have a debate with you with that. CPSU, which is our federal arm,
started with them.
It was started with them, and you know the unis have, they've had 20 days for a
wherever it
long
started
time.
It was powered by the New South Wales union movement.
That's true,
support
that's true.
To get it there.
Yes, so, it was powered. Absolutely.
It was still the New South Wales union movement at the heart of it after all of that.
And it really was.
Yeah,
it made a difference. And it, like to actually, like our members, person, they've experienced the opportunity to use that type of leave.
Yeah.
I think no one would say that that's a great leave, as in, you know, no one wants anyone to have that leave, but that you can actually use that leave that makes a difference to those people trying to protect them and their children.
And I think really. That's one of the things about the union movement is we do a lot of things, like the paid domestic violence leave, that isn't sort of we get on and do the job, we get things done, we're not necessarily blowing our own trumpets all the time. We deliver for not just our members but for people who aren't our members.
Yes.
And I think that's the really important thing about the union movement. And we don't get enough credit for the things that we do achieve, because if you start acknowledging, particularly right-wing politicians acknowledging
absolutely
the work that the union movement does, then that undercuts their arguments that we're irrelevant.
Yeah, well,
and we're not.
No, we're definitely not irrelevant. And we can both say that quite confidently. But thank you for sharing that, Mark. And I think, like I said, it's important for listeners to get a sense of why people get involved in the movement. But today, we really should be talking about this New South Wales state election. That's being held on the 25th of March this year. That came too quick, by the way. I felt like the last one was just here yesterday, but we're here campaigning again. But this week's been interesting. The coalition government has been targeting New South Wales Labor on their policy to scrap the wages cap, which is, you and I both know, we've been campaigning for this as a movement for 10 years.
11 years now,
Yeah, 11 years. But the narrative, their narrative, is that they can't pay more than the policy as it will affect infrastructure in New South Wales. Now, what do you think of that?
Well, I think the terms infrastructure is really interesting, because we were doing polling last year and some focus groups, and the term infrastructure came up, not in the sense of building, but social infrastructure. And when we talk about social infrastructure, we're talking about people who are employed by the government to deliver services in New South Wales.
Yes.
And one of the things that people did acknowledge, there were heroes in the pandemics. There were essential workers in the pandemic, and I think it's really important for your listeners to understand that when I say essential workers, that term is no longer just to people who are in uniform or in the emergency services. That expands to anyone who worked through COVID to keep the state going, whether they were packing shelves, whether they were packing the photocopier in an office, whether they were actually a transport worker, all those sorts of positions were essential workers and are essential workers. I mean, you talk about one of the stories I always like about the PSA are the guys and the women who are park rangers, or the appropriate
park
term.
Park rangers, yeah.
But who are then also the people that they drop in the middle of the wilderness to stop bushfires.
Yeah.
And that is an essential, both those roles are essential, and they need to be recognised as essential.
And while we're talking about that, I think one area that we really need to recognise during the pandemic, cleaners.
Yes.
And they're everywhere. All of a sudden, they don't matter anymore. But they do, right?
Well, I think the cleaners are a great example of essential workers who, when this government has cut health expenditure, those are the positions that actually went.
Yeah.
And they cut cleaners, they cut those services that are people who go unseen but play a very vital role in our systems. And all those cleaners that they got rid of, all those positions, they had to bring them all back in the middle of a pandemic. And I think that's where it's so interesting to see that term essential worker has changed so much because of a pandemic, because the things that we took for granted became front and centre to make sure we got through a pandemic and we survived as a bunch of humans in New South Wales.
We're going to get to your campaign in a minute, but I just want to touch on a little bit of it. When you did the polling, and what did the people say about essential workers? Who exactly were essential workers for them?
So the polling for essential... Well, the focus groups we had, it's interesting, it's slightly changed because of obviously interest rates and cost of living.
Sure.
So last year there was a really high recognition of everyone who'd been an essential worker during the pandemic. People felt that essential workers should get a pay rise.
Yep.
They had a bit of an order in it, but essentially it was, you know, health workers, educators, prison officers, anyone who went to work, they saw as they should get a pay rise, and why isn't this government doing that? And the interesting thing is, when you explain to them, did you know there was a wages cap that has prevented these people getting a pay increase? People go, wages cap? What wages cap? So that was explained to them, and they would be really outraged about it. That's slightly changed on this side because of the cost of living and interest rates going up, but people still think we need essential workers and they need to be retained and held. I think the stuff that the government's come out with this week about it's all about pay, it's not all about pay. It's about conditions. We know that many people who work through COVID, whether you're a health worker in the health system or you're a prison officer in a prison where, you know, COVID had broken out, you're in the Department of Health as a bureaucrat who made sure that the system's all working so you could trace people. These workers are the ones now where people think they're really important, but we shouldn't just be talking about pay.
Yeah.
We should be talking now about how do we retain these workers. And in a survey that we did at the end of last year, 6 out of 10 public sector workers were thinking about leaving their career.
Yep.
And 3 out of 10 were thinking of moving interstate. And I don't know whether your listeners remember, but last year the Victorian government was advertising in New South Wales saying, come to Victoria,
yep,
better conditions, better pay, we're better able to do it.
Now, weren't the Queenslanders doing that as well?
I think the Queenslanders are doing something similar as well.
So, Mark, why is it important for us to scrap the wages policy for public sector workers?
Well, it's a pretty simple question, and I'll probably phrase it slightly different.
Go for it.
No, not for you, but the way the politicians have been talking about it this week. So we want to get rid of the wages cap so there's an ability for our members, union members, to negotiate with their employer, the New South Wales government, which is the biggest employer in Australia, on having conditions and pay. And it's not just about pay, it's also about conditions that will keep workers, essential workers in New South Wales. And as we know, that we're losing people out of the health system. We've got a massive shortage of teachers. And I think in many other professions, people are actually getting burnt out. And one of the things I say is that it's not just about the pay, it's about how do we ensure that we have nurses, radiographers and cleaners in hospitals? How do we ensure we've got enough teachers in our schools? Now, this government talks about how it's built all this infrastructure, tollways, sold electricity to privatise in order to pay for all this. How's everyone? I mean, I've got to ask the question, how's everyone's electricity prices going at the moment? Are they going down?
Well, it's funny. Someone in our team just the other day said that their electricity went up by $300. Mm. So that's massive.
Massive.
Yeah, absolutely massive.
And so these cost of living pressures are things that people start to think about when they're going to go stay in a profession or leave a profession. I was talking to someone the other day who was telling me about a young teacher who was actually a lawyer, and he got into teaching because he wanted to be a teacher. Now, obviously a smart young person teaching. Spent a couple of years there, then got engaged and realised couldn't live on a teacher's salary. Or another woman was talking about her daughter, who is now an acting assistant principal in a primary school, been working there for 10 years, she's still casual.
The acting principal is still casual. Is that what you literally just said?
So that young woman cannot get a loan because she's a casual employee, yet she's an acting principal.
That's incredible. Because one of the things for us in schools, for our members are obviously the school administrative and support staff, 70% of them are on a contract, insecure work. And that's one of the things we've been fighting for years. I mean, we got the pay rise. We had the pay equity case, as you know, and we got that, but it was the protection. And the Liberal governments, and I'm going to use plurals, that was also the federal at the time, and this current government are really wanting people to work in, I don't even know what word to use. I was going to say it's insecure work, but in anxiety, because that's what it is. People are anxious because I've worked in finance and I know what it means to get a loan. I know what finance organisations think are riskies, and that's someone that doesn't have permanent employment. So, but for a acting principal to be on a contract is insane to me.
It's just crazy. And also, I think the other point to make is that these are highly feminized industries.
They are.
A lot of women are in those industries, so it's not high pay anyway at the starting point, and you're in an insecure job, and you can't actually afford to, you know, live in Sydney. I think it's worse than that, because how many people now can afford to go and work at Prince of Wales Hospital, or, you know, the new hospital on the Northern Beaches, and have a 5-10 minute walk to work?
Well, you can't.
You can't. So you've got people who are driving 2 or 3 hours to work.
Sure.
Tolls from privatisation. You've got the cost of living and interest rates.
Yes.
What the question is for this government is, do we want to have schools and hospitals and all this social, all this physical infrastructure built with no workers in it? And that's the real question. Do we want to know that our kids go to school? Do we know, this is the little story I tell is, do I want to know that my daughter can leave home, go to the bus stop,
sure,
get picked up by a bus? When she gets to school, will there be enough teachers there to teach her? If she falls over in the playground and bangs her head, will she have to wait an hour and a half, 2 hours for an ambulance, or will an ambulance pick her up and get her? And when she gets to a hospital, will she be treated in time, or will she spend, you know, 12 hours in emergency waiting to be seen? And the answer to all those questions for everyone and all your listeners is no, we want quality services.
Yeah.
New South Wales is an expensive state to live in.
Sure is.
And just saying that we've got a cap so we can build infrastructure is not an argument about ensuring we have a better society.
Well, I think you've answered my next question, because the next question was, if infrastructure is the government's argument, how have other, well, actually it isn't, but how are other governments in the past been able to pay their workers?
I'll answer this in two parts, because I think it's interesting. This government says it's built all this infrastructure,
sure,
toll roads,
yep,
new buildings, stadiums. But how many of us on a Saturday morning who go to our local shopping centre can't find a parking spot?
Exactly.
How many of us have still got potholes in our roads? Oh. How many know our local school either doesn't have enough teachers, or in some of the new suburbs in Western Sydney don't even have a high school?
We were talking this morning, and how many classes are merged together because there's not enough teachers. So you've got year 4, 5 and 6 in the same classroom with the one teacher. It's there's something that's not right here.
I had a story the other day. An English teacher was talking about her husband, who's a science teacher, and he's being made to teach English in the school that he's now in. Now, he's a very highly qualified science teacher, but he's not an English teacher. So it's not his fault, but parents have a right to say, well, what's the quality of the education my child's getting in English? And these are the fundamental issues, and this is a government that has constantly put pressure on workers.
Yes.
It's increased the workload and administrative burden, I think, on every worker,
sure,
in New South Wales. It said, these people are in the public service, we're going to take advantage of their goodwill.
Yeah.
And we're going to demonise them as some sort of lazy group of people,
yes,
who are greedy, asking for more money.
Yes.
When they're actually provided services that got us through the pandemic. And when they're in our focus groups,
yes,
the only group people didn't see as essential, politicians.
Yes. And that's ironic, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, people understand the value of their public services, and when there's a cost of living crisis,
yes,
people are driven back to rely on their public services.
Yep.
And if they're not there in those really crunch periods, that's when they really notice, and that's when they start saying, what's going on with this government?
Yeah, I totally agree. And as you know, our community campaign is privatisation, mm-hmm, hurts everyone. And the conversations we've had in both Penrith and Parramatta, the electorates, have been exactly that. And I remember there was a woman where I was standing at Penrith Station, where the buses are,
yep,
and the woman, she was angry, and she said, these buses, and I turned around the flyer and I said, yeah, we're talking about them too. And yes, they shouldn't, yep, be privatised. And she said, it is, not only is it more expensive, but they don't come.
But that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
The government says we've still got these services. Just because you've got a bus with the same number on it doesn't mean it's going around the same route. Doesn't,
exactly,
mean it, the same amount of stops are there.
Yes.
And the service isn't as regular. We know that.
Absolutely. So do you think this argument that Premier Perrottet and Treasurer Keane can continue with this in regards to the wages policy, or is it redundant?
I think the argument is obviously redundant. Yes. I think, you know, Matt Keane, I like kids who've got their Year 10 economics sorted out and then they become the treasurer of the state. but Matt's more a thespian than he is a treasurer, I think.
And he proved that yesterday when he was on Ben Fordham 2GB with Daniel Mookie and wouldn't even let Mookie speak. So, yes, he does that quite well, and he's done that a number of times in parliamentary inquiries. Yep.
Well, usually people with nothing to say talk a lot.
Yeah.
I think you'll find. What they're trying to do is they're trying to say, we've only been here for the last 12 months.
Yes.
We're not responsible for the last 10, 11 years. We've only been here for 12 months, and it'd be good if you give us another 4 years and give us a go. What we've got to remember is those two people were instrumental.
Absolutely.
Instrumental, yes, in the privatisation of assets.
Yes.
Over the last 11 years. Yes. Matt Keane was one of Gladys Berejiklian's Praetorian Guard, and he kept her there.
Yes.
And she oversaw that as treasurer and as having Perrottet as treasurer to drive this through. You cannot say, I've only been here 12 months, guys, give me another 4 years. Look at their record over the last 11 years. And they haven't thought twice about either privatising an asset or dismissing a public sector worker because they think they've got too many workers in various departments. And I'm going to have a quick rant here. I've seen workers dismissed for things far less than what some of these people have been getting away with for years.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yep.
Absolutely insane. What are your thoughts on Keane in particular calling public sector union members thugs, as apparently the Labor Party is listening to us and doing whatever we say?
Well, it'd be good if the Labor Party would do everything we say and told them, Marianne, but that's not how it works. And I think we were chatting a little earlier. In the union movement, only a third of the unions affiliated to Unions New South Wales are actually also affiliated to the Labor Party. So overwhelming, the largest union, certainly the PSA, the nurses, the teachers are not affiliated.
No, we're not.
To the ALP.
Or any party at all.
And play a role advocating on behalf of the members as the other unions do who are affiliated. People do their work in different ways and respect the positions and the diversity of their memberships in the way in which they do that. I don't know if you go and talk to the average admin assistant in a school.
Yes.
Or a nurse.
Yes.
Or a radiographer.
Yes.
I don't know how many of them are thugs.
I don't think many of them are.
No, I don't think many of them are. And I think if you look at the players, particularly in the Liberal Party, Scott Morrison, another bully, Dutton, another bully, when they start to talk about thugs, just because you sit in Macquarie Street and you wear a tie doesn't excuse you from being a thug yourself. And the contempt they've shown for the workers in New South Wales is a disgrace. They were happy during and after the pandemic to put one hand around the shoulders of essential workers and smile and congratulate them, while at the same time they had their hand in the back pocket of those workers taking money out of their pockets.
Yeah.
That's thuggish behaviour, and I think the politicians should have a good look at themselves. And Matt Keane, by saying those sorts of things, is not only diminishing the role that workers play, but he's diminishing himself as a politician and the role he holds as Treasurer of New South Wales, where he should be valuing his workforce, as the biggest employer in Australia.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I should add, while we wrap up this part of the pod, that in 2020 we received a poultry increase of 0.3%. Currently, this year, for listeners, this is really important, the wages policy this year is up to 3.5% inclusive of superannuation. And that doesn't mean we'll get 3.5 because there's a productivity part to it this particular year. Next year, it goes back to 2.5% inclusive of superannuation. And I should add that the respective public sector unions still must go through the process to get the pay rise. Mm-hmm. And it's not a given. So a lot of people always turn around and go, what do you do for us as a union? Well, we fight every year to get you a pay rise. So just because the policy says this is what you can get, that doesn't mean we get it. We've got to go to court. Well, first we write to them, half the time they don't respond, then we go to court and we fight it out, right? Yep. So, and I guess for us, one of our key things for hoping for a change of government is that we introduce back the independent industrial umpire, because at the moment their hands are tied too at the commission. So we need a fair commission that can actually look at cases and give a recommendation and not have it recognised, I guess, is basically the best way
to say
it.
We need a fair and independent commission. I think last year I was on the front page, I think, of the telly saying it was the year of the strike. And people were saying, well, why are you saying that? And it was from talking to workers who had enough. And I think if we looked at last year, the PSA was out on strike in a number of its departments. Sure. Health workers were out on strike.
Yes.
Teachers were out on strike. And I often say, if you've got, you know, those groups out on strike on the street repetitively, there's something wrong with the system.
And you couldn't say it better than that. For us, one of our biggest member bases is our school members. And they were the biggest at our strike. And we had close to 10,000 people and correctional officers.
Yep.
And there was this beautiful scene with them singing. There was a song before they started walking. And you've got these women. And people don't look at them as professional staff. Mm. They look at them as they are the mums that help. And they are professional people. They are there to support the school, which includes the teachers, the management of the school, and the students and the parents. And then when these people go on strike, there's a reason, and you said it perfectly, Mark, they're not happy and it's not fair.
And I call it the tuck shop mentality.
Yeah.
It's that this government thinks there's a whole lot of women who just want to volunteer their time to be in the tuck shop.
Yeah.
But if you take each of these people out of the workforce, the system grinds to a halt. Your school administrative assistants, you take them out.
Oh.
You ask the teachers to start doing, I mean, they've got enough to do as it is without, we don't value the roles that we that those people undertake in our system. And as I was saying before, these are the roles that are unseen.
Yes.
Very often not talked about or celebrated, but without them, you can't run a school. You can't run a hospital. You can't run a transport system. They're the people who just do not get the credit for the work they're doing. And as you said before, to have Matt Keane belittling these people, I don't think he's done a hard day's work in his life. I don't think he's ever got his hands dirty. And he kind of strikes me with the guy from Seinfeld with the hand sanitizer all the time. But, you know, it's that, you know, spend a day in their jobs.
Yeah.
Under the stress they're under, short-staffed, you know, they
get just your don't. Hands dirty.
They just don't respect what these people actually do. Yeah. They're the unsung heroes of the pandemic, and they are essential workers.
You know, we had members that were actually during the pandemic, and no one's talking about the pandemic, by the way, too, during the election. And I think that's a huge issue for members, not just our members, but the community. Mm-hmm. Because they still remember, as soon as you say lockdown, they're like, I can't do that again. So that is this current government. They were in charge. It's on them.
Yep.
Right? But our members were doing up packs and going to the kids' houses to give them the work that they needed. I don't think people understand, if you don't have kids in particular, say kids are grown up and you don't know what's happening in that space, they were doing that in their own time.
Yep.
They weren't getting paid for it, but that's how passionate and what they believe in the role that they play, which for us, it makes our job, we want to fight for them even more, right?
Yeah, because they always go that extra step in their jobs and don't complain about it.
Absolutely.
And this government has taken that goodwill and taken advantage of it for the last 11 years, and people are saying, I've had enough, and this government's bearing the fruits of that behaviour by people leaving their professions.
Sure. It seems that workers aren't important to the government here in New South Wales. Unions New South Wales campaign is essential workers deserve better, is recognising the value of essential workers, you've basically just said that, by providing good pay and working conditions. Why is this campaign important for this state election?
Because when we talk about deserve better, it's obviously pay, but it's also conditions. It's also about how do we retain our workforce. By retaining our workforce, by having enough people in the positions that we have, that ensures that people who are essential workers do get better.
Sure.
Because it's not, and I think this is the thing we need to get across, it's not just about the pay, it's about the conditions of your workplace, how much stress you're under, how much abuse you cop as a worker.
Yes.
No matter what, you know, if you're forward facing and talking to the general public, there's an element of, you know, violence and abuse, and anyone who does that faces that. It's about ensuring that our systems are in place so that those workers are respected because they do deserve better, but also the general public deserves better in the services that are provided, making sure that we have enough workers to do the jobs that need to be done.
Exactly. Now, this Sunday is the 19th of February, and Unions New South Wales is having a barnstorm, and it's at Revesby Workers. Yep. I have to ask this question because this question's been asked of me many a time. What is a barnstorm?
So a barnstorm is where a whole lot of people get together and take something over as a big group. It's about a big show of strength.
Yes.
It's about saying we're here, we're big and we're important. And so on Sunday at Revesby Workers at 11 o'clock, we want to get as many activists together and unions together to send a really clear message to the government that over the next 6 weeks, we're going to be out there holding this government to account.
Yes.
But also, whoever becomes the next government, the problem will be ensuring we retain and train our essential workers.
Yes.
And that government, both parties need to make a commitment to that. And if they're not going to make a commitment to that, then they need to go. And I'm not saying one or the other.
Yep.
It's a two-step process. I'd like to get rid of this current government.
Sure.
But whoever takes over, we've got to hold them to account over the next 4 years and make sure they deliver on the promises they've made.
And they've got a bigger problem because it's a mess.
Yep.
That they have to fix. That's not going to be overnight.
No, it's not going to be overnight, but there has to be a commitment to do it.
Sure.
A commitment to the fundamentals. And one of the starting points is, A, how do we retain the existing workers we have? Because
yes.
We can't afford to lose any more. We've got to retain them. And then as we train new workers, it's not, as you say, Marianne, it's not going to happen over 12 months. Some of these positions, we're going to need to train people for 4 years before they do it. So we just cannot afford to lose people who are thinking, I don't want to do this job anymore. It's too stressful. It's too hard. It's too rough. How do we make their jobs a bit easier so they stay with us and the knowledge in all our systems are kept?
No, for sure. And that is the key too, because I was going to say corporate knowledge, and I hate using that word when we're talking about government workers. But that knowledge, when it walks out the door, that's another part that the history isn't there. And then it's a huge issue down the track.
Absolutely. It's gone forever. And the public services are particularly bad at recording and keeping that knowledge and passing that knowledge on. And I think on Sunday what people will get is not a whole lot of union officials talking, but we're going to have a whole range of delegates who are going to talk about their personal experiences, why they are doing the jobs they're doing, and what the next government needs to do to ensure that they have a safe and productive workplace and this government can retain them.
And, you know, our union can't fix everything, but together, if everyone does their bit, we make a huge difference.
And we make a massive difference. Yeah. And as I said at the start of the program, the only social movement that's big enough and powerful enough in Australia to change a government is the union movement. We've done it before. We're going to do it again. But the lessons, I think, learned out of 2007 when Kevin Rudd took over,
sure.
We all stopped campaigning.
Yes.
We've got to keep campaigning and we've got to hold politicians to account. And I don't know what happens. They get into Macquarie Street, they get into the high power, and something happens in their brains. Our job is to keep them on the straight and narrow, keep them accountable and make sure they deliver on their promises. And if they don't, then we have to take appropriate action, no matter who they are.
And that's why it's important for us to be talking to everyone at Macquarie Street.
Yes.
Regardless of what party you are, because we need to explain to them what is happening. And I think that makes change as well.
Well, particularly if we end up with a minority government one way or the other.
Exactly.
There'll be a range of crossbenchers.
Yes.
We need to make sure that we've been talking to them. They understand what the union's issues are. In my role, I speak to all of them.
Yes.
Some of them, you know, a bit more difficult to speak to than others, but you need them all on site to understand what the issues are for workers in New South Wales and how they can best support that. And if it is a hung parliament, we're going to need all those independents on our side advocating for essential workers?
With my experience talking to a lot of those crossbenchers, they actually want to listen to you. Mm. They want the information.
Yep.
So that makes it, they will fight for you.
I don't think there's been a crossbencher I haven't spoken to who understands essential services, yes, who understands public sector workers.
Sure.
And understands the job that they do and values the job that they do. They may have different opinions on other issues outside that.
Yeah.
But as a union movement, our starting point is to get the best outcome for our members,
yes,
in the jobs they're doing.
Yes.
And as a starting point, I think we've got good leverage down in Macquarie Street to hold them accountable.
I do too. I totally agree with you. So what are your expectations and how can the listeners get involved in regards to this campaign?
So it'd be great if people can come on Sunday at 11 o'clock at Revesby Workers. If they can't, obviously go to our website and you can sign up as an activist. There's about 6 weeks to go.
Yes.
We don't care if you've got an hour, a day, a couple of days. We just want people involved in the campaign, whether that's helping us with street stores, phone banks. I know the PSA are running a number of campaigns both out in Parramatta and in Penrith.
Yes.
So that's even just turning up the train station for an hour before you jump on your train to go to work and handing out material. It's very much about saying to people and getting the message out, this is what's happened over the last 11 years. You've got a really important decision to make. When you vote on the 25th of March, do you just want a new school without any teachers or admin staff in it, or do you want it fully staffed? Do you want a new hospital that's got no one in it, or it's got a whole lot of health workers in it? Do you want a new ambulance station with no ambulances, or do you want ambulance paramedics there? These are that's the choice it is. And this, as we go back to the other thing, this choice about whether you should pay essential workers or not, the real question is, do you want essential services there in the first place? And if you do, you've got to vote for retaining workers and keeping workers.
Absolutely. Listeners, for more information about Unions New South Wales campaign and the Barnstorm, visit workersdeservebetter.com.au. Thanks for joining us, Mark. This won't be the last time you're on this podcast. Hopefully after the state election we can catch up and see where to from here and what happens. So that would be an interesting catch up just to see after the 25th.
I look forward to it. Thanks. Whether we're smiling or crying, one or the other, Marianne. Or maybe just confused as to who's in power.
No, I think, I'm not going to say it out loud, but I think we're all going to be happy. So
I hope so.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Marianne.
Please visit our website, www.psa.asn.au/privatisation. There is information and assets that you can use if you're wanting to get more involved in our campaign. Also, contact your organiser for workplace meetings to discuss our campaign. Thank you for listening today, and we look forward to you joining us next week. Have a lovely weekend.